Okay, let's get started. So, continuing here in Tefillas Kedem, what we do today is discuss the halacha of Guy fixing a kli for Yusuf Yud, as well as a little bit about electric appliances. That's on tap for today. We still need to get into the actual Maisa Tefillah and Chatzitza and things like that. Bez Hashem, we'll have probably one more shiur after today on Tefillas Kedem, and then we'll get into Hagalas Kedem. So, in Chosh and Mishpat, there is a machlokas, whether Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli or Ein Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, meaning you hire an Uman, you hire a professional to repair or build the Kli for you. So do you say that since as he's building it, he's adding value to the Kli, it's as if he's bought the Kli, he's acquiring the Kli as he's adding value to it, or do you say that no, it really belongs to the real owner, he's just doing a job for you, but that doesn't mean that he's actually Kona, the Kli itself. So it would seem that Ruchapi Yuj Nafkamina regarding Tefillas Kelim. If you give a block of silver to a non-Jew and say, here, make a Kiddush cup for me. Here's the silver, make a Kiddush cup for me. So if you say, Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, as he does whatever you do to make a Kiddush cup out of silver, he's working on it, he becomes the owner of that Kiddush cup. And then when you pay him at the end and you get the Kiddush cup back, you have just purchased a Kiddush cup from a non-Jew and it requires Tefillas Kelim. If you hold Einum and Kona B'Shvach Kli, it's your silver. He's just doing a job on the silver. He's not being Kona the silver. He's making it for you. You hired him to make it for you. So he's not really becoming the owner of that silver. And therefore, when you pay him and you get your silver Kiddush cup, it would not require Tefillas Kelim because it never belonged to the non-Jew in the first place. On the simplest level, that would seem to be how it would play out, and that would seem to have a huge ramification in terms of a Jewish-owned company. Let's say you buy a Kiddush cup, not from some guy that you gave silver to, but from a company, Hatzorfim, or you know, one of these Israeli companies. And I don't know who works in Hatzorfim. I don't know who the silversmiths are. Maybe they are Jews. Maybe there are some Arabs. Maybe they, I don't know. I don't know who they employ. Or you have a Jewish-owned company, but they hire somebody to do their manufacturing. And the people that work in these factory jobs doing their manufacturing, even though the company is owned by a Jew, are not Jewish. So you would think, well, if you hold Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, the people working in the factory are Kona, the Kli that they're making, Mimela, it becomes theirs, and then when it changes hands and it ends up by a Jew, it's going to require Tefillas Kelim. If you hold Ein Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, then it won't require Tefillas Kelim. That's what it would seem. But when we look a little bit further into it, it may not be so simple. Most of the Rishonim learned that Lahalach it's a suffix whether Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli. The Ritzba, quoted by the Tur, says that we paskin Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, that we paskin that Uman is Kona. And therefore, if you give silver to a non-Jewish silversmith, according to the Ritzba, the cup that he creates is Chayv in Tevila, because it's his. When he creates it, it becomes his. And if you have a Kli that breaks and is no longer functional, and then you bring it into the repair shop, and the repairman's a non-Jew, when he's fixing it, he's Kona B'Shvach Kli, it becomes his. When you then go and pick up that Kli that you've already Toveled, but you're going to pick it up from the repair shop, you're going to have to Tovel it again. However, the Torah says that even according to the Ritzba, that Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, you still don't need to Tovel the cup made by the non-Jewish silversmith, because it's not similar to what happened in Midian. We derive all of the halachas of Tefillas Kelim from Geulei Kli Midian, and in Midian, that's not what happened. In Midian, the material and the Kli belonged to the non-Jew, and that's why it required Tevila. You didn't have a case where a Jew provided the material and the non-Jew made something out of the material. In our case, the material belongs to the Jew, so that's not at all like Kli Midian. Mele, it's not Dumya Dekra, and if it's not Dumya to Kli Midian, it's not going to be Chayiv in Tevila. So if you look in Shulchan Aruch and Sif Yud, Shulchan Aruch passes like the tour. Yisrael shenasim kesef lumanovik chavim, lasos of menukli, eino tzarech tevila. Very short line in Shulchan Aruch, right? Very direct sin, just like the tour. You give your silver to an uman ovik chavim, you're not going to require tevila. Even if you do hold uman kona b'shvach kli, it's still not going to require tevila. It's not totally on that issue of uman kona b'shvach kli, because it's for sure not like what's done in Midian. Comes along the Ramah, and the Ramah says, I think we should be choshish for the Ritzba. And he writes, v'yesh cholkin. There are those that disagree, tor b'shem Ritzba, v'yesh l'tov lo b'lo bracha, and therefore the right thing to do is to tovel it without a bracha. That's how the Ramah says. Therefore, you give silver to a non-Jewish silversmith to create a Kiddush cup for you. So according to the Mechaber, no Tevila. But according to the Ramah, Tevila below bracha. Yes, Tevila, no bracha. Then the Rabbah says, and what if the non-Jewish silversmith adds some of his own stuff? If he's adding some of his own silver into the mix, then it needs tefillah. Why? Because in that case, the svara of the Torah doesn't apply. Meaning, then it does become similar to clay midyan, because part of the material belongs to the non-Jew, just like by midyan, where the material and the work was done by the non-Jew. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan Simchat Zayin explains. That's already, it's not exactly like clay midyan, because you are providing some of the silver, but it's close enough. That's close enough to clay midyan that would require tefillah. So you buy a metal cup from a non-Jew, you tovel it, and then the bottom falls out. So you bring it to a repair shop, they fix it, they meld it back on or something. So do you have to tovel it? So if you give it to a non-Jew to fix and he doesn't add any of his own metal, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you don't need to tovel it. According to the Ramah, tevila b'livracha. If the non-Jew has to add some of his own metal in order to fix it, tevila with a bracha without. Definitely tevila in such a case. Pashtos with a bracha, right? I mean, it sounds like it's not even a suffix anymore. Obviously, the silversmith is a Jew, then it doesn't require tefillah. But if it's a non-Jew, then lechora tefillah with a bracha, which would mean that a person would have to like ask that question, like, "Oh, how do you do this? You know, do you have metal back there somewhere that you added? You know, so you'd have to know how he does it." Now, how does this play out in a Jewish factory? So, if you take a look at Pesach Tshuva Sivkat and Yud Beis, Pesach Tshuva Yud Beis, the Talmud of Bala Bracha, Kasev Sefer Chachmas Adam. Nearly the Yisrael Hamachzik Huta Shaosin Zuchuchis V'yesh Lo Paulim Avdi Chavim Al Hepech Yesh Lismoch Al Makilin. You own a factory where they make glass, and you have Ovdei Kochavim working for you, or the opposite. It's an Ovdei Kochavim owns a factory, and there are Jewish workers. We could be Samech on the Makilin. Ule Esatzorach Mutal Lestamish Below Tefilah Davis Avit Rabbanan. And leisa tzorech, you could just skip tefillah entirely because glass is only chayv in tefillah mitrabanan, tzav mitrabanan. V'tzorech lahazir, chenvanim sheyasiru alokim zuchuch shlo yivruchu al tefillah, im lo shemach sekuta ovid chavim paul mavdicha. He says, the only time you're going to do tefillah with the bracha is if the factory is owned by a non-Jew and the workers are non-Jews. So he's quoting Chachma Sadma, a glass company that's either owned by a Jew or the workers are Jewish, you don't need tefillah because it's a safek and the glass is only chayv mitrabanan. Aruch HaShulchan and Sif Nun Ches strongly rejects this. He says, what does it have to do with Umkana B'Shvachli? Meaning what the Pesach Tshuva is assuming, what the Chachmas Adam is assuming, is that if you have a non-Jewish worker, it might become his. So maybe it's going to be Umkana B'Shvachli, even though the factory is owned by a Jew. Says Aruch HaShulchan, factories have nothing to do with Umkana B'Shvachli. Factories produce hundreds, thousands of items, and they clearly belong to the factory owner. There's no havamina that they belong to the guy who happens to be somewhere on the assembly line in the factory. The workers are clearly schirei yom. They're paid by the hour. They're not paid by the kli. And even if they were paid by the kli, that's just a way of encouraging them to work harder. And therefore, even for a metal kalim, says the Aruch HaShulchan, it does not require tefillah. In the case of a non-Jewish on factory, Jewish workers, it would be the opposite. Even glass kalim would require tefillah with a bracha. I mean, it all depends who owns the factory. So tell me, either or, whichever way you go, as long as somebody is non-Jewish in the equation, the Chachos Adam wants to say, oh, it's going to be a suffix in tevila without a bracha. It says here, I have no suffix. The halacha is, when it comes to a factory, it all goes by who owns the factory. In fact, Rav Moshe Paskins, that also it does not require tevila if the factory is owned by a Jew, because you don't say, Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli by Schir Yom, only by a Kablan. And plus, you have another snifla hakel, is that maybe when all the real work is done by machines, you're also not going to say umun kona b'shvachli. In Chut Shani, Rav Karel, it's in Tfilas Kelim, page Nun, he says that even if the worker's salary is connected to how many kelim he produces, you don't say umun kona b'shvachli because it's just an accounting mechanism. He certainly doesn't own the kelim. Like, for example, if at the end of the day he says, wait, where's my paycheck? I'm not giving you back all these kelim until you give me my paycheck. It doesn't work that way. A factory worker doesn't take possession of the kelim at any point in time. He could sue for his paycheck, he could ask for his paycheck, but he doesn't own the kelim, he doesn't withhold the kelim.
Yeah, I guess I was just going to clarify that. What does that mean? The uman is going to own your object that he can now just like take it home. You hired him to
until you pay for it. Until you pay for it. Meaning there's a deal that, right, there's a deal that he has to sell it to you when you pay for it, because that's what he hired you to do. But until he pays for it, in Medina Kinyanim, he's the owner. Right, there are a lot of nafkaminas in the Sugya of Chash Mishpat in terms of an onus happens, who takes the loss, right? Those kinds of things that come up. However, there's a complicating factor in factories, and that is that a lot of factories have to run 7 days a week, or so they say. Right, that they can't shut the place down for 1 day out of the week. In fact, in food production, a lot of times, as we've seen over the course of the year, food production, they make the machines in such a way that they could produce lots of different kinds of things, because factories are supposed to be running 24/7. Otherwise, you're not maximizing productivity. So you want to get the most out of. So factories are meant to run 7 days a week. So a lot of Jewish factory owners have a shtar mechira, where they sell the factory for Shabbos and Yom Tov to a non-Jew. They have someone, let's say their chief operating officer is a non-Jew, so he becomes the owner of the company for X number of days a year. So l'chora, the kelim produced on those days would be chayiv and tefillah. So Darkei Tshuva actually makes this ha'ara that you got to, you know, when you do the shtari mechira, if you're serious about it, you know, if it's a real shtar mechira, you have to pay attention to what the ramifications are. What about you giving a knife to be sharpened? So, you know, you have a knife, it's yours, and then you bring it, give it to be sharpened. So that, there's no machlokes. But that, l'chora does not require tefillah at all. And the chassidus writes in chelik dalid, simon chav ches osvav, that the knife is usable before you sharpen it. You can't say umar kona b'shvach kli if it was a perfectly functional kli, just not as sharp as you would like it. When the shame kli becomes batel, then you have a different point. In Shuvah Shevet HaKahasi, Chelik Dalet, Simon Reish Zayin, Oz Beis, he brings a raya from the Beis Yosef and Simon Kof Chav Beis that discusses the kasher status of a knife that you gave to be sharpened. And the Beis Yosef never says, oh, but wait a second, if you gave him the knife to be sharpened, don't you need tefillah skelim? Right? Never comes up. Why? Because it doesn't need tefillah. And so you have to, there's what to discuss about the kashrus. We'll make a lot of that too. But there's what to discuss about kashrus when you're given a knife to be sharpened. Now, it's very common in Eretz Yisrael that they have a blade that's produced by non-Jews and a fancy handle that's added by a Jewish company. I have a knife like this at home. So one of my Talmidim got me a while back. It's a really heavy knife, and the handle's like super ornate and fancy, whatever. And the blade, I mean, my father was at my house last Shabbos, he was looking at the blade, he's like, oh, this is a very chashava something knife, I don't know, like he was familiar with it, but it was not like a Jewish knife, meaning, but it was clearly a challah knife, like they don't sell this knife for anything else, it was clearly made. So what do? The Jewish company will order a bunch of blades, they'll attach a fancy handle that looks appropriate for a challah knife to the blade, and then they'll make the kli that way. So what do you do in such a case? So in Mesoras Moshe Chelek Aleph Yardea Os Mem Vav, he says that it's pater from tefillah. That's considered the Jewish company made the knife, even though the blade existed beforehand. Rav Chaim Kanievsky is quoted by the Ohel Aryeh to say tefillah b'lo bracha. Why would it be pater? Because gamro b'yad Yisrael, which l'chor is enough to exempt it, and also the product received from the nachri is unusable, and it's therefore pater mitvilah. Meaning what they got from the nachri was a blade. What do you do with a blade without a handle? So that wasn't a kli yet. In the Kuntras Birkas Yaakov, I saw in the old Yaakov they quote this. Kuntras Birkas Yaakov was written by Rav Bloy. Rav Bloy, famously the author of, gotta know Rav Bloy, he was the author of Pischei Choshen, which is like the sefer on Choshen Mishpat, like the encyclopedia on Choshen Mishpat. He also wrote a sefer on Shatnez. He wrote a lot of things. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He lived in Ramat Eshkol. Passed away a few years ago. I once met him. I said good Shabbos. Yeah. I was davening in a shul. Or good Tavach. It was Marav and Matzai Shabbos. So I think I said good Tavach. Or maybe I got so nervous and I said good Shabbos. I don't remember. But he was a Jew who was a banker, I think, originally. And he was writing such beautiful Sarm al Chashem Mishpat that the Eid Haredis recruited him to join the Beis Din. And he did. And you know, he became a blight. So anyway, so he dealt with a case that they wanted to import aluminum kelim from China, but they said that if people had to tovel them, nobody would ever buy them. Whatever it was, I don't know what the materials was exactly. That the whole point was that they were supposed to be easy and convenient, and if you tell people to tovel them, no one's going to buy them. So he suggested that they be delivered without their handles and have the Jewish company install the handles. Meaning that that's enough. It's Gamru B'Yad Yisrael. It's not really a perfectly functional kli beforehand. And then that would solve the problem of Tefillah Skedim, which all of that helps give us a little background in terms of what to do about, in terms of how to handle electronic appliances. So the truth is, half the problem can be solved a lot of times just by looking at whether this particular electrical appliance, even if it were not electric, would need tefillah. Like, for example, a hot plate, right? So, or an electric stovetop wouldn't require tefillah anyway, even if it wasn't electric, because kelim that usually don't come in contact with the food and are normally used with other kelim put on them, like a hot plate, you don't normally put, occasionally you might, but rov tashmisha of the hot plate is not by putting like pizza bagels directly on it. Rov tashmisha of the hot plate is you put something in a 9x13 pan on the hot plate. So it wouldn't require tefillah anyway, and therefore, even if you sometimes put your challah directly on the plata to warm up your challah, it does not require a tefillah. A hot water urn, or let's say in Israel, they have not like the Shabbos urn, they have the kumkum, yeah. So it's plastic, the whole thing is plastic, often, and the bottom is metal, right? The bottom part is metal. So the Rama and Siv Zayin, right? Rama and Siv Zayin told us that if there's Rechaim Shel Pilpulin Shabatocha Eitz Barzel Kavua Shetochen Bo Tzarech Tzvila. The Rama told us that if, since the food comes in contact with the metal, and the kli would lose its functionality without that metal piece, so then you are required to tovel it with the bracha. So you have to look at each electric appliance and see, would this be the kind of thing that even requires tefillah in the first place? And then we could start talking about the electric element of it. What about a toaster? So it would seem, I think we mentioned this the other day, bread comes in contact with the metal, and the classic, not a toaster oven, a bread toaster, where it pops up, you know. The metal is essential, it should require tefillah. But Rav Meisha has that funny svara, in Yoredei Chelek Gimel Simon Chav Dalid Bedvara Toaster Lanias that he ain't sort of tefila, because Isa Bavel Dazar Dafay Nehem Beis the Klei Suda Amur in Parsha Ul Klei Suda Nechshu Zorm Shu Tzorich Lusuuda Mitzad Abishol Avshei Mevino Som Lashulchan Makom Suda. He says, let's define Klei Suda. Klei Suda is not only what you have at the table; it's even the kelim that you use in preparing the food to be eaten later on. Or it's what's actually brought to the table. I mean, a klei suda has to fit one of those criteria. Either it's necessary in preparing the food for the meal, or it's actually used during the meal. Aval toaster shemi yavshin sham pas afoi betov, where you just dry out the bread really well. V'roy lachilas kol adam ein lach shivat zorach hasuda b'shvil mashi yesh rotzim liyavish hapas shenam lu k'tzas yoser. Yeah, it's not called that it's doing anything. It's just drying out bread. It's just making it a little more tasty for you, because you prefer drier bread and not moist bread. The bread isn't missing anything without that. So it doesn't really do anything. So since it doesn't really do anything, it doesn't require a tefillah. Because, meaning what he's saying is, it's not klei suda. Klei suda is either that which prepares the food to be able to be used at a meal, or is used during the meal. This does neither. It's not used during the meal, and it's not preparing the food to be able to be used at a meal, because it was able to be used at a meal beforehand. A pot enables you to eat the food, and it's therefore considered klei suda. Toaster makes the food more enjoyable, but the bread was already ready to eat. Most posts completely reject this svara. Meisher of Shechter didn't like it at all either, because what do you mean? It's making a significant enough difference in the food that when people, it's called something else. People call it toast. They don't call it bread anymore. They call it toast. Right? I'm reminded of my grandmother, Allah Shalom, whenever we'd have like soda that like had lost all of its fizz because someone left the cap off of it the whole time. So we'd be like, ew, you know, I don't want to drink that. She'd be like, who needs the bubbles? It's perfectly good without the bubbles. And we're like, it's kind of like the whole point of soda is the bubbles. But like, you know, so much like, oh, who needs the dryness? You know, it's all good. But that's what a toaster is. That's what it's supposed to provide. Now, what do we do with electronic kelim that actually are chayiv in tefillah and might get ruined? Your Shabbos hot water urn, an immersion blender, the zhuzher. That's an immersion. It's the English name is an immersion blender. You go on bedbathandbeyond.com and you type in zhuzher and nothing will come up. So there is a thought that people have that electronic devices cannot survive going in water. Yesh v'yesh, just to realize that it's not always true. The Betzina Rav has a tshuva in Bar Moshe where he says that he spoke to master electricians. In fact, in one of the write-ups about the Betzina Rav after his patira, so they made a big deal about how the Betzina Rav was a master of technology. He was very interested in finding out all the modern technology and finding out how to deal with it. That's why he wrote a whole section of his Sefer. If you have the Tshuvas Be'er Moshe, we have in the Beis Medrash, there's a whole section called Kuntros Electric, where any Shaila related to electricity, so he was in touch with electricians. And he writes there, I've spoken to all the electricians, and they tell me when it says do not immerse in water, you can immerse it in water, leave it sitting for 3 days, it will dry out on its own, just don't do anything for 3 days, and nothing will happen to it. Wires that don't have actual electricity running through them will not be ruined by having been put in water and then giving it time to dry out. Obviously, when it's plugged in, don't immerse it in water, but when it's not plugged in, you have nothing to worry about. That's what he writes in the Tshuva. He was dealing with primitive kind of appliances, though. Our appliances nowadays, it's like a computer. You know, if here's an electric appliance. If I were to stick this in the mikveh and pull it out and let it sit for 3 days, the whole screen will be broken. I still will not be able to see anything on the computer. If you were to do that with your Keurig or with any of the these appliances here that have like a more sophisticated, what do they call it? But a more sophisticated like computer in the appliance, so then it's lechara going to break. So what's the option? So Ramesh in Yerdei Chelagal Siminin Zayin, Ramesh writes Aval Kibin Shekli Kazeh Osa Shnei Dvarim. So he starts talking about a hot water urn, and he says, well, let's take a look at the hot water urn. Is it a kli or is it multiple kelim? So he says it's Osa Shnei Dvarim. Lamatu Makom Shemuna Chamachel Is Bashal O Lamala Chutei Elektri Shua Eisha Mevashal. Tzarich tefila rak chatzia kliya tachton shemesim shem amachol u makom ha'elyon shesham chutei elektri ein tzarich tefila. Sounds more like a toast rabbi. But tzarich lidbol rak chatzia tachton v'la elyon. Let's say you have coils on the top of your toaster oven, and on the bottom is where you put the food. So the coils are the fire, and the bottom where you put the food is the kli that holds the food. So he says, I don't think that's one kli. I think that has the status of two separate kelim, one of which never comes in contact with the food. And therefore, you only have to tovel the chatzi that comes in contact with the food. The afsha kli echad hu, but it's really one kli, it's attached. Ein tzarich litbol kulo, d'lo nevata le'elyon la'tachtol nahachshiv gam ha'elyon l'klei su'uda. You don't take the part that has the electrical element and say that it becomes bottle to the part that doesn't, and it becomes klei su'uda. Kivin d'mishtami shul d'makom e'esh, shul tash v'shachar. That's just for to keep the fire. As far as their tash, as far as what you use them for, it's like two kelim that just happen to be connected to each other. And the only thing you want to worry about is the makom achibur. So he says, oh, the makom achibur, the place where they're connected, how am I going to get a bias mayim in that place? Otherwise, you need a bias mayim in the entire kli. He says, no, it's a beis hastarim. A beis hastarim, a part that's never exposed to the outside, is not going to require a tevila anyway. If you have a kli that has kishkas inside that you can't ever access, water doesn't have to get into those parts of the kli. A beis hastarim doesn't require a tevila. So if it has two sections to it, the electronic part and the part that comes in contact with the food, you only need to topple the section that comes in contact with the food. So he's talking about like a toaster oven. The food is directly on the bottom of the oven, heating elements on the top, and all you need to do is topple the bottom part. And he says, even though one needs to topple the entire kli, you don't have to worry about the beis hastarim. A kli where the food is placed on the bottom and the kli that heats up the food are like two separate kelim, legabe tefilas kelim. That's what Moshe says. So a hot water urn, same thing, right? This Ramesh is most often quoted in the context of a hot water urn, meaning if the hot water urn has a place where you put the water, and then on the bottom there are coils that there's the whatever wiring that's on the bottom of the kli. So dip in the hot water urn, but not the whole thing, not with the wiring at the bottom as well. So Achronim asked Ramesh that Shulchan Aruch and Sif Yudalid. Shulchan Aruch and Sif Yud Daled writes, wait, I got the wrong Sif. That, no, I got the wrong Sif. Where is it? No, it's Yud Beis. That Tzorech Lahatpil Yodei HaKli. That you have to tovel the handles of the Kli as well. Because the handles are considered part of the Kli. And if the handles aren't completely immersed, then Tevila is not valid. So doesn't that same thing apply to Rav Moshe's case, that the upper half is not tovel, the Tevila should not be valid? Meaning it's part of the same Kli. Granted, it has a different function than the rest of the Kli. But it's all one Kli, they're all connected, and that's what makes them one Kli. So I saw in the Sefer HaKashrus HaMatbeach V'Kelev, Perek Vav Halacha Zayin, he writes, Ubedasei Rav Moshe Nira, Didavka yodos hakli she'in aleim shem kli b'fnei atzman harei b'teilem kli v'chayav b'tvila av mehem asuyim mimin she'inu chayav b'tvila v'she'in kein right, av mehem asuyim mimin she'inu chayav b'tvila v'she'in kein begavne she'guf hachim amu kli l'atzmo av she'mishami she'sakli ha'ochel umechubar lo mikol makom l'inyin tvila kivin she'u kli l'atzmo v'einu kli suda einu chayav b'tvila. Meaning there's a difference between handles of the Kli which become batel to the Kli and require tefillah, and two kelim that are fused together. Handles aren't anything on their own. They only become functional because they're attached to the Kli. But in Moshe's case, he says an oven is an oven, and then the pan that you put in the oven is a pan that you put in the oven. And that's the way to view the toaster oven. You have the coils, that's the heat, and then and that's independent, and then you have the part where you put the food. I don't know, would that carry over well to wiring in a hot water urn? Wiring in a hot water urn, is that anything? I guess if there are coils, you could say coils are the oven. But the coils are all along the side probably, right? You're just not dipping the wiring in. Is that wiring not buttled to the Kli?
Who cares where it is? What's the distinction Rebbe's drawing? Meaning it's about the function of as a separate function.
So the wiring and the coils are one Kli. It's just hard to say that they're one Kli when the coils are all up the sides of the Kli together with the water and the wiring is all in the bottom.
Could different Moshe say that it's about the location?
No. You're right. That's probably what Moshe would say. That the wiring and the coils are one Kli, and that part doesn't have to be dipped in the mikveh. Elamai, it's going to end up that the coils do get into the mikveh, but it's not necessary. What about the cord? So that's Pasha, Rav Moshe would say. You don't have to tovel the cord, right? That's not part of the same. That's not part of the Kli Suda. Dayan Weiss in Minchas Yitzchak disagrees with Rav Moshe. Minchas Yitzchak says that really even a Beis HaStarim does need tefillah. It's just that there's no problem of a chatzitz in a Beis HaStarim when something blocks it. But it needs Bias Mayim. And in Rav Moshe's case, the Kli is not entirely surrounded by mikveh water. Meaning, there are two dinim in tefillah. There's a din of chatzitza and there's a din of bias mayim. For example, we know for those who learned Hilchos Nida that when a woman goes to the mikveh, she has to brush her teeth. Right? Why does she have to brush her teeth and floss and clean out her mouth? Because you can't have a chatzitza. Does she need bias mayim in the mouth? No, she doesn't need bias mayim in the color. Royal bias mayim in bias mayim makev. I suppose she can't have a chatzitza. On the other hand, sometimes you'll have something that won't be a chatzitza. It's a miyut she'ino makbid. A tiny part of her body that she's not makbid on, it's not going to be a chatzitza. Let's say just the tip of her pinky is outside of the mikveh. It's not in the mikveh at all. Miyut she'ino makbid, it's a tiny part of her body that if there were a chatzitza on that tiny part of her body, it wouldn't be a problem. Right? Is the tefillah valid? No, you need bias mayim. You need to at least have the entire body submerged in water. If you don't even have that, there's nothing. Rav Shechter once told us many years ago. He said that he saw someone quote B'shem Rav Avadi Yosef that if a woman has a cast on her arm, she could just keep her arm out of the mikveh when she goes to the mikveh. Rav Shechter said it was so obvious that the person didn't know what he was talking about. That he's because Rav Avadi Yosef knows how to learn. That was his lashon. He said, Rav Avadi Yosef never would have said something so stupid. It's impossible that without a bias mayim that the tefillah would be valid. So Dayan Weiss says the idea that Beis HaStarim does not require tefillah, it's not that it doesn't require tefillah, it's that it's not a chatzitza. Whatever's blocking the Beis HaStarim doesn't have a din of a chatzitza that's gonna make a problematic tefillah, but it needs to be submerged. What Rav Moshe is suggesting is take your hot water urn, fill it up with water, right, and then submerge it only to the point where the electrical part, the wiring, is not submerged. He says that, and you're going to say, oh, the part where they're connected, that's no problem. It doesn't need to be. It's not a problem anyway because it's based on stardom. It's not submerged in the water. If it's not submerged in the water, then it doesn't even have a Bias Mayim. It's really a fundamental machlokas about the lumdus of Bias Stardom, right? Whether it doesn't require tevila at all or just doesn't have the status of a chatzitza. So whether you have to be tovel the area where the cord is connected would depend on that machlokas. Right? Everyone would agree you don't have to dip the entire cord, but where the cord is connected, right, whether that has to be tovel, it has to be inside the mikveh. It would depend on this machlokas between Minchas Yitzchak and Ramesha. There's a Rav Vadia, I think, writes in Taras Abayis and Hilchos Nida that a cord is generally considered like a separate unit from the that which it's connected to. He talks about in Hilchos Nida when it comes to passing one thing from a husband to wife. So he said by the old phones that had a cord in the phone, the husband can hold the cord and the wife could grab the receiver because they're two different kelim. They have the status of two different kelim. Yeah.
How did Rebbe defend
the
Moshe? Meaning, he doesn't argue that the woman thinks.
Yeah, what you have to say is Moshe understands that Beis HaStarim just doesn't require tevila. It's part from tevila, the Beis HaStarim of the Kli. That it doesn't need Bias Mayim Bechlal. It's not a Din Chatzitza. By a woman, it's a whole different din. By a woman, adrava, the Beis HaStarim doesn't need Bias Mayim. It just can't have a chatzitza. Right? It's an entirely different halacha. Another way that some want to be makel is based on the Tshuva Shav Yaakov, who said, we quoted already, that anything that's connected to the ground doesn't require tevila. So, since the electronic device, when it's connected, when it's plugged in, it's connected to the ground, so it's mechubel lekarka. Rav Vazner and Shevet Levi says that he's not particularly happy about this. Let me see if I can get you his lashon here. Shevet Levi, what is it? Simin Nun Zayin, I don't know what Vav Yordaya, Simin Nun Zayin, probably Chilgal. He says, Ushchichi Ayom, Machvos Barzel, Shetzolabem Betochem, Al Yidei Resh, Eschutei Ala, Trisha Betochem, Shebevada Yiskalkal Ayadei Amayim. Lo Re'isi Shum Eitzel Ishtamish Po. Rakim yikvu achutim achrei atvila. Oh, yitknu osam shuv. You're gonna have to fix it. It will break, and you fix it. Va'al yasiach alibcha lahatir. Don't allow your heart to convince you that it's mutter. Al pi masha ratzalom adikivin du mechubarim al yidei achut lekosel nikra kliya mechubar lekarka shapotar min atvila. By saying that it's potar min atvila because mechubar lekarka, dilafi anias daiti zehevel ruus ruach. What's the non-Orthodox translation of that? I respectfully disagree. Right? Now, some more suggestions. What else can you do? So if you have a kli, it's definitely going to get ruined in the water. I remember when we got one of those pump pot hot water urns for the first time, like, I don't know, I remember we were still living in Cedar, so it must be close to 20 years ago. And my mother-in-law went to the store and got us one of those hot water pump pot things. And it said, do not immerse in water. But Debrecin Rav told me that I can, and you can leave it for 3 days, and nothing's going to happen. So I immersed it in water, and then I let it sit for 3 days, and then it never worked. I plugged it in, it didn't work. So it didn't blow up my house, but it didn't work. So I went and bought another one. Never told my mother-in-law. Okay, that's we didn't tell them the second time around. It happens to be some of those companies are Jewish-owned companies. The pump pot technology was developed by a frum guy in Boston. So I think he has his own company, one of the chef, or one of some of them are frum-owned companies. So they may not require tevila. They have other issues. There was a Bishul B'Shabbos because they have the the indicator of how high the water level is, right? So that could be every time you pump out water, the cool water from the indicator goes into the pot and will become a vushal. So in the initial version of it, Rabbi J.J. Schachter connected me to the guy who invented it, and he said, I said, what do you do about the bishul? So he said, no, I have a letter from the Institute for Halacha and Technology or something, or one of those. And I said, can I see? He sent me the letter, and it said that because every time you pump out, the water comes in, and it will become mevushal, and when it's in the thing, it's below Yatzaladas. So you have to make sure that you heat up all the water before Shabbos and take a pump or two out before Shabbos so that it remixes, so that it's lo nitzdan in the gamri in the indicator, and therefore once it's lo nitzdan in the gamri in bishul achar bishul. And the letter said, and make a sticker that goes on each pot that says that you have to do this in order to be able to use it on Shabbos. So I said to the guy, there's no sticker on the thing. He said, no, if you look in the instruction manual on page 12, it says that that's what you have to do. Okay, sure. Who reads the instruction manual of a hot water urn? You plug it in. You know, it's like, oh, what do I do with this thing? You know, you can figure it out. You plug it in. So it's hard to, I don't know why that, okay. So what are the other options? So Rav Shlomo Zalman in Milchas Shlomo Chelek Beis Simon Vav says that we combine two shittas together. First, you can say that maybe when it's connected to the wall, it's mechubel karka, and you give the kli to a Jewish handyman. He disassembles and then reassembles the kli. So once it's disassembled, it's no longer considered a kli. And then when the Jewish handyman reassembles the kli, it's as if a Jew made the kli. So it doesn't require tefillah. I don't know. Maybe he's worried that he's not going to disassemble it enough. Maybe that's his concern. He says just removing, yeah, it must be, because he says just removing the plug and then to reinstall the plug is not going to work, because the fixing has to be done on the body of the kli itself. So you have to make sure that the fixing is enough of a fixing. And he tells that with the combination of the two, you could be makel. But if you have a regular kli that was ready tovel, then broke to a point that it's no longer usable, and you give that to a non-Jew to fix, and he adds his own metal, then it requires tefillah with a bracha. Doesn't add his own metal, so we already saw it, right? But that's where Shlomo Zalman's
Eitzah. Even if you were to go with the Mechubel when it's not plugged in, isn't it?
If you're going to use it when it's not plugged in, but many of these kelim are useless when they're not plugged in. Right, so as we were discussing, we discussed it right at some point that if it's a kli that's usable when it's not plugged in, then you have a real problem.
An urn
l'chor is usable when it's not plugged in. Yeah, meaning it won't give you hot water, won't give you coffee, but it will give you, it can hold your cold water. Option number two is to sell it or give it to a non-Jew and then borrow it from him. Shulchan Aruch in Sifta Zayin says, right, if you look in Sifta Zayin, im shachach v'lo hitpil kli me'erev Shabbos or me'erev Yom Tov, no problem, just give it to a non-Jew as a matana, and then you borrow it back from him, and since it belongs to a non-Jew and you're just borrowing it, so that will be mutter. So over here as well, the electrical appliance will get ruined in the water, so it's enough of a shasat chak, just like Shabbos is a shasat chak where you can't tovel. So sell it to a non-Jew, borrow it back from him. However, there are those who don't like this option, because the Shulchan Aruch says, it seems to say that this is a solution for Shabbos, which is a one-day event, it's a short period of time, but not something that should be used in perpetuity, right? That you're going to be used this for forever. Taz, Sivkot Yivches, Yinan Elov Yichom Matana, nearly, Tahai Tikuna, Enu Alefi Shah, Tahai Nu Lo Osa Shabbos. Obuchol calls man shein lo mikvah, or if you don't have a mikvah where you are, aval achar Shabbos, so she's damin lo mikvah. Kibun sheishtak olamis biyad Yisrael, vaday avikul kuch biyado. Meaning he says, but once you're talking long term, or you have a mikvah available, Shabbos is over. Now it's considered lo kuch biyado because you're keeping it. He says, and we already had this in Shulchan Aruch. If an Ovid Chavim gives you a mashkon and he plans on leaving it with you for an extended period of time, then it's yours and it needs tvila. So you could argue that this taz is not applicable, right? Because what's the case of the taz? That at some point it becomes possible to tovel. So maybe when at some point it becomes possible to tovel, you could tovel, but you have to tovel, but maybe not when it's not. Although the basic point that we're trying to make based on this taz, that the Achronim try to make based on this taz, is that whether it's possible or not, fundamentally, is it yours? Fundamentally, does it require tevila? And fundamentally, yes, it's yours. Meaning at a certain point we say that once it's biyado for long enough, it fundamentally becomes yours. Option three, if you can't disassemble and then reassemble, because option one, you know, Shlomo Zalman is having the guy disassemble, it's not super practical. Also, selling it and borrowing it back, it's questionable halacha whether that works, because you can borrow it back forever. You're borrowing it back for one day till you have access to it. You're on vacation somewhere, or you're on a trip somewhere, and you know, you need a grill to use that night or whatever, and then, but you'll use it in the future, you'll tovel it in the future. So that's one thing. But you know, an electrical appliance you plan on having in your kitchen forever is not the same. So option three, if you can't disassemble then reassemble, and there aren't non-Jews around to sell it to, or you don't trust that option, maybe you could be mafkir the kli in front of three people, and if there aren't three people around, be mafkir it meinol v'natzmo. Why would that work? So there's a Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Tzitzis in Simin Yud Gimel Sivkat and Tezvav, who says that if you're in a shul and you notice that your talis is pasul, and you'll be embarrassed to remove your talis in the middle of davening because you'll be the only guy there without a talis, so the best thing to do is be mafkir the talis. Because once the talis doesn't belong to you, you're not mechuyev in tzitzis. If it's a talis that's not yours, it's part of tzitzis. So similarly by tefillas kelim, if the kli doesn't belong to you, so you're not going to be chayev to tovel it. You're not going to be chayev to tovel it. So Shlomo Zalman in Milcha Shlomo and Simcha Samachav Sif Tazayin says that if one Jew is mafkir a kli that he bought from a non-Jew, a second Jew can use it without tefillah, as long as he has in mind not to be koneh, because a kli without owners is not mechuyev b'tevila. But again, that's also a tricky thing to rely on, you know, and maybe only for temporary, not for permanent. So the best kula to rely on is probably the kula that we said at the very first year on Tefillas Kelim. If you say like Rav Asher Weiss that it's a mitzvah nana matyus, you have anas rachman apatrei, or the way Rav Shachter I think formulated it is that Tefillas Kelim was never meant to apply to a kli that can't be toveled, that it only applies to those kelim that can be toveled. So then you just say fundamentally it's a chayiv in tefillah. Meaning all of these eitzos are working with the assumption that the kli is fundamentally chayiv in tefillah, and I need some out. I need some way that you know to avoid the tefillah.
When we asked Rav Shechter and he said that Svara, he was mandated to a Balam or by Mila, where if you
Is that the same? Wow.
Yeah.
No, what are you tying up? What are you tying up? What do you say? Why is it different than the Balamar? You're not saying it's different than the Balamar.
No, I'm saying just because if you were to dip it and break it, you wouldn't have a mitzvah. It doesn't mean it's not fundamentally chayiv mitzvah.
Meaning, ein hachadami. You're not mechayiv the mitzvah. But who says you could use a kli that's not tovel?
No, he was also assuming like Rav Asher Weiss and Rav Heinemann also has
Rav Heinemann says the same thing also?
They have his lashon on the start too.
Yeah, what did it say?
I didn't read it.
Right, which makes it okay. So based on the same idea, right? That it's a mitzvah and it's not, and therefore it's you would say anas rachman apatre in the mitzvah. But interesting, that's an interesting dimion to the Balamar. Okay, gotta think about that one. Yeah. Yeah, so if it's the kind of thing that, you know, like a sandwich maker that lies flat. First of all, a lot of the sandwich makers now have removable plates. Like the because they can turn into a waffle maker if you flip them over, so they make them with removable plates. So those are the best. Then you can just tovel the metal plates, and they actually are two kelim, and you don't have to worry about Ramesha's base of start. But if you could do Ramesha, it's a Ramesha, might as well. Meaning, but George Foreman doesn't open flat; it opens like to 60 degrees. So there's no way to get the entire surface in without dipping the electric component also. In which case, I assume it's going to break, and I rely on Rav Asher Weiss and Rav Schechter, and apparently Rav Heinemann. I think that's what you should know. That's not universally mukubal. There are a lot of people, you know, that will, like, I've seen people dip electric. I always take a step back, you know, when someone comes with like the refrigerator and you know dumps it in the mikveh, you know, just but there are people. There are a lot of people that that do that. I think it's not 100%, meaning if I were to take 100 hot water, like let's say the pump pot that I toveled, then it broke. Now, I don't know that it wasn't broken before, you know, when we bought it brand new. I don't know that, but I assume that it wasn't broken before. If we were to take 100 of them and put them all in the mikveh, probably and leave them all for 3 days, 70 or 80 of them, or maybe 90 of them, will probably be fine. But, you know,
is
it may...
Really nice
what? I think so. If you're at a high risk of breaking it, I think that's enough. I don't think you have to know for sure that it's going to break.
My brother asked for Newberger. Newberger said, try it out. If it breaks, buy a new one. It don't know what.
So you thought you have to sacrifice one.
Yeah. So I once said that over to Shear in Denver, and someone told me, when you're with a lot of Orthodox crowd, you can't say that.
I mean, that's mamish what I did, right? That's why I tried it and it broke, and then next time I didn't do it. Wow, interesting. Yeah, I hear that. I hear the modern Orthodox part also. Okay, I'm going to stop early here because I didn't prepare the Temin Halacha Shir that I'm giving in a half hour, so I'm going to run to do that. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos, wonderful Yontif, and Be'ez Hashem, we'll have Shir on Wednesday, right? Okay. Have a great day, everybody.